This is the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the NFL wire site from the USA Today family of sites. Seth Cox is my co-host. He's from SB Nation's RevengeOfTheBirds.com, an Arizona Cardinals site dedicated to, obviously, to our Cardinals. And we are in episode 285. The Cardinals are coming off the bye week. And now look ahead to a week against the Miami Dolphins, a puzzlingly intriguing team. Now, we're going to talk more about this one, Seth. But in this episode of the show, Seth, goodness, we thought this weekend was going to be uneventful, and then Sunday night, the news hits two positive COVID tests. So we're going to start off talking about this. We find out two positive tests. It later revealed that it was quarterback Byron Murphy and outside linebacker Devon Kennard. So let's start the show off talking about the COVID implications, just the surprise of what happened and the impact that we're looking at over the next week or two. What was your initial reaction to the news last Sunday?
You know, it was one of those things where you look at it and you see that it's ambiguous, and you go, okay, we'll kind of see what happens. You know, who is it that's really going to dictate? I mean, because in reality, it could have been, you know, a guy like,
Josh Miles, right?
Yeah, yeah. Guys that are playing, but, you know, that aren't really going to do much. So for it to come in on Monday and it be, you know, Devon Kennard announced it on his personal Twitter first, and then And then to find out it's Kennard and Byron Murphy, it does suck. Let's just be honest. It sucks. It's terrible for the team. It's an awful luck coming out of a bye week, coming off the unequivocally the biggest win of the Cliff Kingsbury era. So then go down two starters and two guys that are playing at a high level, and all of a sudden you're sitting there again wondering, how is this team going to recover? How are they going to react to this kind of pressure? And we saw it. What was that, game three? No, game four, when Buda Baker was out. And you know, obviously, neither Kennard nor Murphy are as singularly important as Buda, but I think their combined absence could probably weigh in the same vicinity as Buda. And we'll see kind of how that works out and where that takes us, because this is going to be an interesting game. And when it came back that it's two, you know, starters on defense and two key players, I mean, it's really good that they traded for Marcus Golden at this point, because their edge depth is just kind of falling by the wayside.
Yeah. For me, I actually, when I first saw the news, I'm like, oh, come on. Just when you think everything is going well, but that's kind of been the case. But then I sat back and thought about it, because especially with the news that there were no other positive tests on Sunday, that was actually super good news. And Cliff Kingsbury said it, I think, four or five different times. It was never going to be a case of if, it was always going to be when. the Cardinals were super lucky at the beginning. You know, they never had any positive COVID tests during training camp. It was just Keyshawn who ended up on COVID reserve. And I think based on what we've seen, based on the circumstances, because at the time they were practicing, that I think he had contact with someone and ended up having it and didn't actually test positive at, like, after practice or whatever. And so that's why it was only him that landed on COVID reserve, because he didn't have the contact with someone else on the team. And then to have, of all times, to do it. Now, first you're like, oh, come on, people. You can't, you think of the bye week mishaps that we've had with in years past, where you had the seventh round rookie getting a DUI and things like that. But it actually works out really well, because the positive test came after they'd already practiced. And they'd already tested negative the day before. And so when they do the contact tracing, there's nothing. And everyone tests negative the next day. You're thinking, oh, that's actually quite lucky. We've seen with other teams, like right now, Baltimore has a ton of guys on COVID reserve because of the Marlon Humphrey thing, because there is a number of, like, seven different players they deemed as high risk or is high contact that they've got to clear. You saw what happened to the Patriots, to the Titans, the Raiders, who had their entire offensive line in isolation for at one point. And the Cardinals, you know, minimal impact in training camp, like no impact in training camp, minimal impact early in the season, as it was Keyshawn Johnson, who now doesn't even dress for games these days. And now you have, now, yes, Kennard, DK, and Murphy are both critical. They're both big contributors on the defense. But the impact ends up being minimal because it doesn't cause an outbreak or more vacancies on the roster. So even though the Cardinals get hit, it was about as good a scenario as you can come up with, especially since at Kennard's position, they're getting good play from Hassan Reddick, and now you add Marcus Golden. And so that ends up being quite fortunate with everything. Now, with Murphy out, that raises one major question, and that's kind of the thing that I've been asking all day. I was recording on a Tuesday night. The question for me has been, what are they going to do in the slot? Because Murphy has been their slot guy. I think he's taken every snap that they've had in the nickel. And you look at some of the cornerbacks they have. I mean, they got Drake Kirkpatrick. They signed Prince Amukamara to the practice squad, so he's a guy that they could add. They added Devontae Bosby, a guy that the Broncos, super athletic guy that the Broncos cut just as in a numbers game, and kind of the feeling around the Broncos these days is they messed up. It's just kind of the vibe that I've heard and read from around Broncos people is that equates to what the Cardinals did with Marquis Christian, and were really bummed out about that. They hoped he'd end up back on the practice squad, and then he gets signed elsewhere. But none of those guys play the slot. Bosby's not really played the slot. Amukamara hasn't played in the slot. Kirkpatrick doesn't play in the slot, which leaves, you know, and we saw this. I know, now this is Seth's guy. Kevin Peterson, I know, can and has practiced in the slot. And then the other option is your undrafted rookie, Jace Whitaker. So while we're looking at the cornerbacks, and then you look at, well, Buddha's played in the slot, and Jalen Thompson maybe could do it, but we've never seen anything about Vance Joseph that says, hey, let's put those guys in the slot, especially since Buddha played there in 2018, and what was the first thing Vance Joseph did? He moved him back to safety, which turned out to be, you know, brilliant, because Buddha became one of the best safeties in the game.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, we've talked about this. I feel like Vance does his best work when he's got his back against the wall, when he doesn't have these are my guys, they can take care of it type of reaction. And when he has to scheme things up, I feel like he does a really good job. And so I'm interested to see what he dials up, because you do have a Kevin Peterson, you know, like you said, do they call up a Jace Whitaker? Prince Amukamara hasn't really been a slot guy. You know, you talked about Bosby, not really a slot guy. Kirkpatrick and Patrick Peterson have struggled from the slot. Like, these are all reality. This is all reality. And so Vance is going to have to get creative. The one kind of thing that maybe will make this not a massive deal this week is the fact that, you know, the Dolphins offense is not great. It's not bad by any means. I don't want to, you know, but their passing game, they've had three really, really big passing games, and then they've had four really bad to awful passing games, and their last passing game was awful against the against the Rams, and they just traded their key slot guy in Isaiah Ford. Now, he's not great by any means, but they traded Isaiah Ford. They put their, you know, kind of receiving running back, their best running back, Miles Gaskins. I don't know if he's on IR or if he's just injured. And he's definitely not playing against the Cardinals. They're saying 3 weeks. You know, I don't want to say it's not a problem, because it's always an issue when you're missing your best guys, especially when you're talking about a position as important as the slot corner position in the NFL, especially in today's NFL. However, I don't think it's going to be as big of an issue as it could have been if it was maybe against the Bills and Cole Beasley. Definitely the Seahawks, you know, and maybe even, you know, like a team like the Rams with Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods and those guys.
Well, and here's the thing, that's still a concern moving forward, because depending on what happens with Murphy, we don't know how long he's going to be out. If he's asymptomatic, I mean, there's the potential he'll be fine for next week. There's no guarantee, though, because if he has it and shows any symptoms, he has to be out for 10 days. He can't come back until at least 10 days after his first symptoms show. And it's been 72 hours since his last symptoms. And so, you know, that it might not be an important question this week, but since they do play the Bills next week and then the Seahawks after that, it remains important, especially since we've seen a lot of players come back. We'll take Cam Newton for one. Cam Newton has not been the same player since he returned, whether it was the COVID issue, the COVID positive test, or simply because you're in isolation. So you're not rehabbing, you're just isolating, so you're not practicing and you're not getting that work, and your body has to reacclimate. And so it does become a question moving forward. So, you know, we'll see what happens this week. If I had to guess, it's probably going to be Kevin Peterson, I would guess, with an outside chance of Jace Whitaker. But since Peterson's on the roster, I think they view him as the higher upside, although they did like Whitaker in training camp.
Yeah, and so, you know, it'll be interesting just to see how they break it down, where they go with it. I don't think it's going to be a huge issue this week. That'll be, you know, obviously if it is an issue this week, then it'll be even more of an issue moving forward. But, you know, it's one of those things where you definitely see where it could be a problem, and then you go from there.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. There are a few deals that were made at the deadline in the NFL. The Cardinals were not one of them. Let's talk about the trade deadline, the impact of the fact that the Cardinals didn't make any other moves other than Marcus Golding. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. The NFL trade deadline came and went on Tuesday, and the Arizona Cardinals, although there were some rumblings and rumors and whispers of some activity ended up doing nothing else. I'm not surprised. As they now, they're basically their only one move that they made was acquiring Marcus Golden for a sixth round pick from the New York Giants. And ultimately, do you think that there was a trade that they should have made?
I mean, we talked about it last week. I would have loved to have seen them trade for Stephon Gilmore, especially, I mean, he's not a slot corner, but in light of the COVID issue with Byron Murphy now, just, I mean, stocking up on corner or maybe grabbing Desmond King for a fifth. Obviously, they didn't have a sixth rounder, so they couldn't have traded their sixth. But, I mean, in the end, it's always – there's always two things. One, it's always discussing big deals, but the way the salary cap works in the NFL, it's really hard to make trades for guys under big contracts. So Stephon Gilmore, who's the guy? Kevin Zeitler, right? He's the guy with the Giants.
Yeah.
The guard. I'm trying to think of the other big, like there's one other big name that's like a $14 million a year type of player, Michael Thomas, you know, the wide receiver out of New Orleans. Yeah, J.J. Watt. Yeah, like these guys that make that much money, it's just a different game. You know, you can't just send a player back of equal value. Like it's not the NBA, you know, and obviously it's not Major League Baseball where the salary cap is fake when it comes to trades and stuff. But when you look at – when you look at what they need and the players available, I just didn't see the value. That's the second part. This is obviously a very odd year with COVID and everything else, and no or limited fans at the game. So they've set the salary cap floor at what, 174, 175?
Yeah, 175.
Next year, which is
a drop of 17? No, it's – what is it? I think 198 this year, so it'd be a drop of 23 million.
23 million. So it's all well and good to go and trade for Stephon Gilmore and trade a first round pick. And by the way, there is a 0% chance you can draft a player in 2021 that will be as good as a healthy Stephon Gilmore in 2021. Just a 0% chance. So I want that to be understood. However, there's no way that you can afford to pay Stephon Gilmore, re-sign Patrick Peterson, you know, do all the other things that they need to do coming off this season, and trading away your first round pick, even though Gilmore is going to be better obviously this year and in 2021, it doesn't do anything for the future. And you still have to play that game of the future and the now. And because of the salary cap drop, it could end up being Gilmore, you're losing Patrick Peterson, you're losing a first round pick to potentially replace Patrick Peterson, and you know, you're losing maybe a Robert Alford or some, you know, somebody else. Pick a secondary player that's important. You know, maybe you're having to cut Justin Pugh now because of these things. Like that's the other thing. Because of this year, teams were really reluctant to give up cost controlled first and second round picks for highly paid players that are going to be on the salary cap in 2021. And so at the end of the day, it's great to want to put together a Madden team, but you still have to have a long-term outlook and plan. And, you know, as good as Gilmore is, we talked about this last week, he's going to be 31. He only has 1 year left on the deal. Are you really going to give up? Let's just say they, you know, unless you can guarantee that you're going to the Super Bowl, not even winning, but that Stephon Gilmore puts you in the Super Bowl, I just don't know how you can guarantee you can trade a first round pick for that. And obviously you can't get that in a guarantee. So
now we look at some of the deals around the league. Now, the one that never happened, which would have been the one exception to that, Xavien Howard. It wasn't going to happen, but he would have been the one guy. I'd been like, yes, give me him every single time. He's young. He's got a contract like Patrick's, and you've got him for several years. But Gilmore, I never thought was that smart an idea. It's great for the now, and unless Keim really, really believes that this team can make a run to finish off the season strong, make a run of the playoffs, it really, considering while the Cardinals optimistically look good and a potential playoff team thus far, coming just year two in the Kingsbury area, see, it seems like you're jumping the gun a little bit to try and make a move like that. But around the rest of the league, are there any of the trades that kind of stood out to you? I think the one thing for me, like the one trade is obviously you look at Seattle picking up Carlos Dunlap for, a bag of chips. And that obviously will have an effect on the Cardinals moving forward because they still play Seattle. But do you think Dunlap is the impact player that the Seahawks need?
I mean, he's a good ball player. It's just one of those, what does he have left in the tank? How much juice does he have left? He's been around forever. Is he going to be kind of a DJ Humphreys type? Not Calais Campbell type of, veteran presence that gets that group together. They don't have a ton of dogs up there on the front four that I think it's going to make that much of a difference. Obviously, he's a good player. And let's face it, they're still the number one seed in the NFC. So, they definitely improve, but I don't know if this takes them from middling to bad defense to, good. I mean, definitely doesn't take it definitely doesn't take them to great. It might make them average, which with that offense may all be all you need.
Right. And it'll be interesting to see the impact there. Were there any other deals around the league that sort of stood out to you? Obviously, the one that came as kind of a shock was the trade that the Dolphins made for DeAndre Washington. And that was followed up by the news that Miles Gaskins was injured, which means, the Cardinals will be facing the Dolphins without their top back.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, not only are they without their top back, they really don't have a plan outside of him. You joked with me off the air, like, they could really use a a Kenyon Drake right about now, right? Like, that's the thing. When you look at their running backs, I mean, you just go to their running backs. Let's see here. Matt Breida. I mean, he's not bad, but he's played 103 snaps all season. Patrick Laird's played 24. Jordan Howard's played 29. and Malcolm Perry's played 7. So everybody combined has played about half of what Miles Gaskin has played. And he's had a nice little season. I mean, he's not, I don't want to oversell how good Miles Gaskin is, but he's had a nice season. I think we can both, kind of agree that's where you would put his play this year. He's averaging only 3.9 yards per carry. He's got what does he have receiving? He's got 30 catches for about 200 yards. So he's right around, 600 yards of total offense on the season. He's got, 2 touchdowns, but he gives them, he gives them some wiggle back there. I mean, you and I were talking about off the air. The weirdest thing that's happened is that they replaced Ryan Fitzpatrick when their offense seemed to be kind of hitting its stride. And obviously they had a bye week, so I think I'm pretty sure that was part of the thing, you know, the reasoning, but you know, they put up 31 against Jacksonville in a win, their first win. They played Seattle and they put up 23, which, I mean, obviously hindsight, that's not a huge number. Then they went to San Francisco and put up 43 points. And then they played the Jets and put up 24. And all of a sudden, their offense is kind of humming along, you know, and then they bench Fitzpatrick. And so now you lose, you know, your starting quarterback, you lose your starting running back. It's just, it'll be interesting to see what, where that offense is this week. But let's be honest, they didn't need it against the Los Angeles Rams.
Nope, they didn't. We'll talk more about the Dolphins a little bit later, but coming up next on the Rise Up Sea-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about some, so the Cardinals didn't have a game, so we're at midseason. Let's celebrate some of the things that they're doing offensively and defensively. Celebration's coming next. That's on Rise Up Sea-Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Celebrations, midseason celebrations for the Cardinals. I think if there's one thing we have to celebrate right now, it is the fact that here we are, 23 games into the Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray era, and guess where the Cardinals are ranked? They are the number one ranked offense in the NFL right now. And total offense is always based on yards. They are the number one offense in the NFL, averaging 419 yards per game. They have the league's number two rushing offense at 160 yards a game, almost 161. And they're middling in the passing game. Well, and then on top of that, so it's not just yards and nothing else. They are now eighth in the league in points scored, which, if we look at that, I think if there's anything that we look at is that, at least for the goal of Cliff Kingsbury, kind of what they wanted to do is they needed to turn the offensive around and develop a quarterback. You can say that Cliff Kingsbury, in terms of that part of the goals that they had for him, has been nothing short of an absolute success.
Yeah, it really has. And you know, we talked about it, that they were kind of slow and stumbling out of the gate. But when you watch this offense continue to produce numbers and yards and how balanced they are on both sides of the ball. I mean, you talked about it yards wise, they're number one. And the two stats that kind of define success for me are first downs, and they're number two in the NFL in that. They have the second most first downs in the NFL. And then turnovers. And they have 9 turnovers, which puts them 18th. So, I mean, obviously not the right, you know, about middle of the pack, slightly, you know, less than average at 18th. And that's a big deal in my eyes, because what wins games is churning out first downs, like being able to keep your offense on the field consistently. And the other way you do that is by not turning the ball over. And so when you see the Cardinals, you know, putting up the yards, they're not empty yards. They're not big play yards, if that makes sense. I mean, they're getting big plays, but they're producing consistent yardage and they're getting first downs consistently. And that's a really important thing, because what that's doing is that's showing that their offense is efficient, and efficiency is kind of king in terms of offensive football, because when you're able to continually get first downs, I mean, how many times have we talked about the opposite, when, especially last year, when the Cardinals were in a third down situation and they just needed to stop, and teams would pick up three first downs on third downs on a drive, and how demoralizing that is for the defense or just the team in general. And now the Cardinals are that offense, and that's kind of similar. Their offense, I talked about it a little bit last week, and I probably misspoke. Their offense is kind of similar to how the 49ers offense was last year. Like, is it a great passing offense? No, it's not great, but it's a really efficient passing offense. The 49ers finished fourth in yards last year. If the Cardinals finished top five, I don't think any of us would really mind that. Do you?
No, that's what I expected this year, based on what we are expecting with the growth of Kyler Murray, the bringing back Kenyon Drake, and the acquisition of DeAndre Hopkins. They should be a top 10 offense this year.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, you know, I wrote about it a little bit in my projections article when you looked at the offensive numbers, and it was really interesting to pull up and see the offensive projections for the team, because you talk about having, obviously, the addition of DeAndre Hopkins, and then you've got the running game involving, you know, Kenyon Drake and Chase Edmonds, and then obviously Kyler Murray. But what's kind of baffling to see is, so Murray's projection right now is just over 4,200 yards passing and literally a yard short of 1,000 yards rushing. Drake's numbers are projecting out to just under 1,200 yards. Now, that's if he plays all 16 games and is healthy on this week, so who knows? But, you know, we can project that.
So even assuming he's missing this week,
he's right around 1,100 yards.
Right. Then. He's got, if he only misses this one game, he's still on track for at least 1,000 yards, which that's something.
Well, and when you combine it with the fact that you're talking about 1,000 yards for Drake, we'll just round up and say Kyler gets 1,000. I mean, if he's at 999, I'm assuming they're going to try to make him the first 1,000 yard player in the NFL. And then you have Chase Edmonds, who's on pace for 400 yards rushing and 500 yards receiving. And so just looking at the rushing numbers, you're talking about from three players on pace for 2,500 yards rushing. That's incredible. And then you go to the passing offense, and you have, obviously, like I said, just over 4,200 yards for Kyler. DeAndre Hopkins has 700 yards right now. He's on pace for over 1,600 yards this year.
He is, by the way, even after the bye, so he's played a game less than some other teams. He still leads the NFL in catches and receiving yards.
And that's what's crazy. So he's on pace for 130 receptions and 1,600 yards, over 1,600 yards. The next closest wide receiver, and again, this is projection, in terms of yards, is almost 1,000 yards away. Christian Kirk is on pace for 633 receiving yards. So he's literally 984 receiving yards away from the projection of DeAndre Hopkins. That, to me, is kind of absurd, one. But two, to see that, it shows you that there's still room for growth in the passing game, which I think is important. Because we've seen that the best thing about Cliff Kingsbury is his ability to adapt. And when you have a bunch of guys that can make plays, he'll spread the ball around. The reality is in the receiving corps right now, they just don't have a bunch of guys that make plays. They have one guy who makes a lot of plays, and then they have apparently Christian Kirk, the red zone threat, because he's on pace for 11 touchdown receptions. It's just weird how much this or how unbalanced this passing game is. When you look at it, you know, your second leading receiver right now is Larry Fitzgerald in terms of catches with 29, and yards is I think it's Chase Edmonds, right? It is Kirk. It's with 277. Like, it's crazy to me.
And we look at defensively, there's a lot to celebrate as well. You look at where they were at a year ago, and they were basically last in almost every single category you could think of. Now, in terms of yardage, they were in the top 10, but that game against the Seahawks kind of dropped them down. They're now about 21st, I think, in yards. But you look at the points allowed, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. They're 10th in points allowed. Considering this was a dumpster fire defense a year ago, to see them become a top 10 team defensively overall. Now, in terms of passing yards, they're kind of middle of the passing defense. They are in the middle of the pack, and they are in the lower end of rush defense in terms of yards per game. But they have completely turned around the narrative. That defense is no longer a liability. And then you look at other metrics. They are number 7th in third down defense. And that's one of the biggest things, is they've only allowed 36.8% of third downs to be converted. They have been fantastic in that. You look in terms of the passing game. They've got 19 sacks this year. And I'm going to look at the passer rating. Passer rating, some people don't really like in terms of a metric. But I think it's one of the best quarterback statistics overall to kind of measure the type of year you're having. The Cardinals last year were the worst at over 109. They were giving up more than 109 passer rating to opposing quarterbacks. And if we think that historically, you're talking players that put up that in a season, they're like all pro quarterbacks or in a career, that's Hall of Fame material every single week. The Cardinals now this year, after a slowish start, their passer rating allow is now 89.1. And this is in a year when passer rating allowed is going up.
Right, and that's the thing, is you have, as the defense improves, it'll be key to this. It'll be key to this team continuing to grow, because we're seeing that this offense is adapting and finding its way, while this defense is working towards, becoming good. And I think in the end, if the offense is what we expect, which is for them to end up as, I hate saying top five, because that just sounds, it just sounds tough. But,
well, they also have the number 2 red zone defense in the NFL.
Right. And so that's the thing. So if this offense ends up being, let's just say, top 10, and this defense continues to play at the level they are, and I mean, they on the schedule left, the only offenses that you really quake in your boots about are Seattle and Los Angeles. I mean, I guess Buffalo's offense isn't bad, but they've been bad the last couple of weeks, last couple of games. I mean, they're 6-2, so don't get me wrong. They're not bad by any means, but, you know, they went from averaging over 30 points a game to rolling out a 16-point performance against Tennessee, who's not been good this year on defense. Kansas City, a 17-point game. Kansas City is a pretty good defense. They only scored 18 against the Jets, and then they scored 24 in torrential downpour and wins against the Patriots, who are a good defense. So, I mean, they have a real shot with Miami, New England, the Giants, the Eagles, and this atrociously banged up 49ers team, who it doesn't sound like they'll have Kittle or Garoppolo back by week 16. And it, I mean, in reality, if they're sitting at
Garoppolo, you know, maybe, but
if
why?
If he doesn't have surgery. Yeah. Right. And that's what I mean. If they're sitting at 6-9 or, you know, 5-10, are you really going to bring him back? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. So,
and so there's so much. I mean, this year, there is just lots to celebrate, but that's not it. But it's not everything's perfect. Obviously, they're 5-2. They've won 3 in a row. They're going in the right direction. What are things to be concerned of? What are the concerns as we move ahead with the season? That's kind of next on Rise Up Sea Red. Back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about the things where we're concerned about moving forward. I think the one thing for me offensively that continues to be the major concern, and they're doing so well offensively otherwise, is the penalties. They as good as they've been offensively statistically, it hasn't felt like they've really put a full game together. And it feels like they still are disjointed at some point in the game, whether it's the beginning or they just have a couple of drives here or there. And I know it's stupid to expect them to never punt or to never have a 3-and-out, but they still are very susceptible to first down penalties. And that's kind of Cliff will live with, but the problem is that it's the first down penalties on that they get in 1st and 20. They've been really, oh, we completely forgot to mention the thing to celebrate is the pass protection. They've given up the fewest quarterback hits in the NFL and the second fewest sacks all year. That's a tribute to Kyler Murray and his decision making, and obviously the offensive line. So, but still, concerns. They still make stupid mistakes at really bad times, whether it's a holding penalty or delay of game. It's just they seem to have penalties at the worst times that just will completely derail their drives.
Yeah, and it's still a team that is that struggles to, I guess, continually get out of their own way. They're still young. They're still immature in a lot of ways, and it shows with that type of gameplay. You know, I think another concern has been the pass defense in terms of receivers. They're, you know, again, it's not terrible, but Robbie Anderson had a big game against them. Obviously, we know about Tyler Lockett.
Oh my gosh, Tyler Lockett. That was goat game.
And so you just kind of, you know that they've got, like I said, the Miami game, and not that it's an easy win, but it's a less of a concern in terms of them passing the ball. Buffalo's going to come in. They have John Brown and Cole Beasley, who are playing really well. Obviously, they have to go to Seattle. That's going to be an issue. And they still have two games against the Rams and Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods, who are the same type of wide receivers, you know, as Robbie Anderson and Tyler Lockett in what they do and how they win. And that's, you know, that's where the concern, I think, comes in overall. Is you worry, where are they going to, are they going to be able to stop teams that can throw the ball and consistently?
Another thing for me, and I think this is a general feeling from Cardinals fans everywhere, is that nobody believes the defense is actually good. And so, and we look back at the performance they had against the Panthers, everyone is ready to fire Vance Joseph, and then they drop a performance like they did against Carolina. It's like, see, they stink. But then they put together a performance. I still think there isn't a belief in this defense, and I think part of that comes because they keep losing guys. You lose Chandler Jones. You lost Robert Alford. Went without Jalen Thompson. Now you're without DK and Byron Murphy. You're like, this defense can't be good. Nope, this defense is bad. And so I think everyone is still waiting for a bad defense to show up. Like, everything that they've done thus far for half a season has been a fluke. And I understand with the attrition they've had, I know that's definitely a concern. But like you said, there's only two real scary offenses left on the schedule, and maybe three. And with that, but still, I think that's a concern moving forward because of the talent that they've lost and that they're not going to be able to hold up and perform at that level all season.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's always a concern. And obviously COVID and injuries is going to – I mean, without Chandler Jones, it's, you know, are they going to be able to consistently rush the passer? So far they've done a really nice job of manufacturing that type of manufacturing that. The next question obviously becomes, are they going to be able to continue to stop the running game? You know, there are questions all abound on this team, but I think the biggest question is, can they continue to force turnovers? That's something that they've started to do more recently, and I think it's going to be a big kind of play down the stretch. Think about it. They forced seven turnovers the last two games. That plays right into their, you know, two highest points scored. I think that they need to be able to continue to put up that type of work, and I just don't know if they can.
Cut on X on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best served Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on. Let's actually talk about the upcoming football game, the matchup against the Dolphins. What are the matchups to look at? How good is that defense, really? And what do we predict will happen? That's Cut on X on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best served Cardinals talk on the web. The first thing that you notice about the Dolphins is this. They have the number one scoring defense in the NFL. I'm not sure if that's a mirage or not. Obviously, it's half a season, and so they're doing something right. Bend, don't break. I have a hard time believing in how good that defense actually is when they are, in terms of yards, only 2 yards better than the Cardinals. And the Cardinals have, and our Cardinals are down in it past the 20. So they're in the bottom 10. 11 in the league in terms of yards allowed. Now, we know that the Cardinals' stats are skewed some by the fact that they gave up a lot to the Seahawks, and that is also true with the Dolphins, who let the Rams roll up 471 yards against them. But that said, a defense that gives up nearly 500 yards isn't a good defense, unless it's just a really bad day. How good is this defense? I'm not convinced that it's that good. If they've played well, I just don't know. I don't think it's going to be enough to stop the Cardinals.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, you go through kind of who they've played thus far, and you look at their outcomes. And so they gave up 31 to the Bills when the Bills were scoring points. They gave up 31 to the Seahawks. After that, the Jets are awful. We know that. The Jaguars are not good, and that was on a Thursday night. So those games are always, you know, kind of take it with a grain of salt, right? The Rams had 471 yards of total offense to the Dolphins 145 and lost 28-17. The Rams had four turnovers. Again, four turnovers is a massive amount. 17 points is actually impressive.
Well, if you look at it, the Rams beat – the Rams offense beat the Miami offense. It was 17-14 because the Rams the Dolphins defense scored a touchdown, and so did special teams. That's the difference in that game.
And then you look at the 49ers, again, three turnovers. That's 40 – you know, and three turnovers that led to 43 points for the Dolphins. They gave up 21 to the Patriots, and that seems like a lot when you now look at how the Patriots are playing. So, you know, all of that said,
their stats are skewed because they gave up, they shut out the Jets, and the Jets don't count because they're awful.
Right. Well, and I mean, you look at it, the Cardinals, you look at the yardage, the Cardinals have given up, how much have they given up this year? I think they've only got one game where they're over 300, well over 300 yards of offense. No, I'm wrong. Sorry. I was looking at the other thing. So the Cardinals, you know, they gave up 572, obviously, to the – they've got those – they've got their two bad games offensively, you know, in the Seattle game and then the Carolina game. They got a mostly healthy San Francisco team, held them to, you know, 366 total yards. The Cowboys game, a lot of those 344 yards came in garbage time. And then the other three games were, you know, good numbers. When you look at it, they're very similar in terms of yardage given up, whereas you're waiting – for that Dolphins, I don't want to say luck because I don't think it's luck, but you're waiting for that Dolphins luck to kind of run out on turnovers and things of that nature that are leading to them holding that, you know, number one points per game defense. I mean, the Dolphins next, let's see here. The Dolphins play the Cardinals, the Chargers. I mean, they could end up being the number one scoring offense or defense in the NFL because it's not like they play a lot of good teams. They have the Chargers, the Cardinals, the Broncos. They get to obviously play the Jets again. The only two teams outside of, I guess three outside of the Cardinals are the Chiefs, Raiders, and they get the Bengals who are moving the ball really well. So it's not like they've got a murderer's row. So they're, you know, those numbers may stay a bit skewed as well. We'll see how it goes, you know, after this week, because I do think they are a good defense. I just don't know if they can score enough points to keep up with Arizona.
Yeah, unless the Cardinals would. Basically, I look at the Cardinals offense and I say, don't turn the ball over, which they've been good about since the Lions game. And you win this football game. And I don't think, and honestly, I don't think it's going to be that competitive. You know me, I am always too optimistic. But I look at this game, and if the Cardinals maintain the focus that they've had the last few weeks, I don't think this is a game that the Dolphins can really compete in, especially since offensively, I mean, the Cardinals just are humming offensively, and you look at the fact that it's going to be Chase Edmonds instead of Kenyon Drake. I think that the running game is going to be more dynamic. Maybe it's not as maybe it's not the same as Drake in terms of late in the game, because Drake is a very strong runner late in the game and piles up those yards. But I think Edmonds will be much more successful in the early part of the game, and then they'll just be able to run, you know, rely on the running game late in the game, whether maybe, you know, Jonathan Ward or whoever that is that's getting those carries can do that. Now, in terms of matchups, where do you see the Dolphins matching up well against the Cardinals?
You look at the Dolphins, and I think the spots where they match up in a good way, they have a really solid secondary. Xavien Howard, Byron Jones are talented, so they're going to give DeAndre Hopkins a long day. DeAndre's going to earn his keep this week. I mean, not that he hasn't thus far, but like, this is going to be a game where he's got to work really hard. After that, and it's not that I don't see much, it's just that, you know, this Dolphins team, it's just not, it hasn't been over the top great. They do a lot of good, they have a lot of obviously Patriot qualities where they are able to consistently kind of produce, and they're able to play real good team defense, and I think that's a big part of it. Emmanuel Ogba is really kind of their best pass rusher right now. He's having a nice season for them. You know, that's going to be a tall task for whoever he lines up against, you know, whether it's Beecham or Humphreys. After that, it's tough to say, because, you know, I don't want to take anything away from what this team has done, because they've been good. And they've obviously at 4-3, they're playing at a better and higher level than we expected, but they don't necessarily do anything that I would say is great outside of pass coverage, which, you know, like we said, the Cardinals throw the ball well, but it's not, I wouldn't say it's their bread and butter. I wouldn't say it's what they do best.
Right, and you look at the defensive numbers, the Dolphins are in the bottom third of the league in terms of rushing yards allowed at 125 a game. The Cardinals love to run the ball. They also allow the fourth highest yards per carry at 4.9. The Cardinals are averaging 5.2. So, I mean, yes, they've got the pass defense, but the Cardinals, their bread and butter is the running game. It sets up the passing game. And whether that's Chase Edmonds, whether that's Kyler Murray, I think that's going to be, I mean, I think the running game is going to build things up. And then that's the thing. The Cardinals will be able to use the passing game off of the running game. And offensively, look at what Tua Tagovailoa did last week. It's not like he did anything special to say, yeah, we're worried about that. He did have the one nice touchdown throw, and I think him getting to play one game before the Cardinals played actually played into the Cardinals' advantage, because, you know, at least, you know, the Rams, at least, they didn't have the benefit of really any film to look at. They didn't have any game tape to look at Tua other than his college stuff. And now the Cardinals have a game of film on Tua and how they used him. And I'm sure with what, if they were able to, if they can get to third down, if they don't struggle in first and second down the way they did against Seattle, if they were able to confuse Russell Wilson, guess what? They will definitely be able to confuse Tua. And so I think this game is, and I hate to predict a big win for the Cardinals, but I see this game being the, you know, the sort of 34-17 game. In fact, that was my, what I wrote for the sports, my Sports Weekly capsule. I picked the Cardinals to win 34-17. That is really going to, it's not going to be that competitive. If you kind of watch the Washington game, the Cardinals just were like, yeah, we're here, we got this, and it just is a, they cruise to a victory.
Yeah, and I'm interested to see what type of energy they come out with this week and coming out of the bye. Obviously, last year, coming out of the bye was a complete and utter disaster for the Cardinals. You know, it took them, what, two games to get back into it? I mean, so they lost, obviously, they were 3-7-1 coming out of the bye, losing. I mean, I know that score looks worse than it was, 36-26 to the 49ers, but it was closer than that. We can all agree. And that was, I mean, that was really three heartbreaking games in a row. They lost by three to the 49ers on Halloween. Then they lose by three to the Tampa Bay Bucks in, you know, a game where they really should have won, but the defense was what the defense was at the time. And then, you know, a close one to the 49ers again in San Francisco. Then they come out of the bye and they just get trounced at home 34-7, like they didn't even want to be there. And then Kyler has probably his worst game of the season in a loss to Pittsburgh, you know, 23-17. Game was the score was definitely closer than the way they played. So when you look at that, it's going to be telling for this team coming out of a bye week for the second time under Cliff Kingsbury. Did they improve? Obviously they're better than last year. They've already tied their win total from last year. I don't see them losing out the rest of the way, but do they come out better than last year? Do they come out more prepared? Do they come out like a team that, you know, 3-7-1, I don't want to make an excuse, but in reality, you've basically, you know, locked up a losing season already. You feel like you don't have a lot to play for, and they came out and played that way, it felt like. And so hopefully in this game they come out and play like a team that, you know, is really controls their own destiny in the playoff race in the NFC. I mean, I've written about it. The fact that they have three games left with the AFC East and two games left with the NFC East. And I'm not trying to sound like this Cardinals team is a juggernaut in any way, but they get a Bills team that looks like they're trying to get to the bye week. Obviously, we've talked about Miami, and then they get the Giants and the Eagles, and I skipped the Patriots. I'm sorry. They get a tough Patriots defense, you know, in New England. There's no reason they don't go 4-1 in those five games. And guess what? That puts them at 9 wins. That's a winning season. And that's kind of the mentality that they have to come out with. Obviously, you know, it's one game at a time, one week at a time, blah, blah, blah. But when you look at it, it really does start this week against Miami, who is some way, somehow piecemealing wins together week by week. And it just feels like the Cardinals should come out and like you said, punch them in the mouth and kind of make a statement of who they are and that they are for real heading forward. And they are going to be a team kind of to be reckoned with.
And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the show. We will be back next week, hopefully after a big Cardinals win. So Seth, ultimately, what is your prediction for the game? I've got the Cardinals winning 34-17. How do you see it playing out ultimately?
I would say something similar. I think they're going to win 31-21 in this game.
Yeah, awesome. So that's it for this show. We'll be back next week. Go Cardinals, and hey, keep listening to the show. We appreciate it as always. Thanks for listening. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root, and we'll be back again next week.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast.
Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.